Good evening, everybody. Okay, we have two haftorahs to do tonight because last Monday night was Shavuos. So I'm going to touch upon both of them. Okay, the first one is going to be Noso, which is Shoftim Perek Yud Gimel. Okay, the compelling question, of course, for the story of Shimshon, is why? Why does he have to be a Nazir? Were there any other people who were Nazirs in Tanakh? The answer to that question is yes. There are two biblical characters who Chazal emphatically say were Nazirim. One is by what's probably as pshat a gzeira shava as you can get. Because when the angel told Shimshon's mother, who, by the way, if you're ever curious, she's never named in the Bible, but the rabbis say her name was Tzlal Ponis. Tzlal Ponis. What kind of name is that? It's a name that does appear in Divrei Hayamim. Right? Shimshon's mother was from Shevet Yehuda, and his father was from Shevet Dan. And his mother was given the instructions for him to be a Nazir. Okay, so we have to determine that a compelling reason why he should be a Nazir. I'll get to that shortly. And his mother was told, "Mora lo ya'ale al rosho. No razor shall, no scissors shall come to his head." Now here's the pshat gzera shava. So I'll just ask a Bakiyas question: what other biblical character is, with respect to this character, are we told that no razor or scissors will touch the hair on his head? Exact same words. Mora lo ya'ale al rosho. The answer is?
Shmuel.
Right, I must confess, I read Jenny's lips first, and the answer is Shmuel. And there is a third biblical character who our sages say was a Nazir, but not because it says, it Dafka says a scissors never came to his head. We can just surmise that because his hair was so thick and bushy, it was thick enough to get caught in a tree and to have him so suspended in the air. And he didn't even want, you know, all he had to do was take out a sword and slice the hair and free himself. But he couldn't do that because he was a Nazir. Right? So he had to just keep picking at his hair to get it out. Anyway, yes, Chazal say that Avshalom was also a Nazir. Okay, now, what's interesting is that the two Nazirs who were declared so from birth were both declared by their mothers, not their fathers, their mothers, which is fascinating. If anyone here listening ever learned Maseches Nazir, the Gemara says that it's Halacha B'Nazir, Halacha L'Moshe M'Sinai, that only a father can make his son a Nazir, not a mother, right? So, therefore, in both cases, you see that Shimshon's father and Shmuel's father, Shimshon's father was named Manoach, Shmuel's father was named Elkanah, that both of them sort of give their plumba. Ach, Yokim Hashem is Devaro, you hear, something like that. Okay, so Shmuel's mother was the one who initiated it, but that's a different haftorah, that's the haftorah of the first day of Rosh Hashanah. And this haftorah for Naso, obviously, there could be no other haftorah for Naso, is plugs, of course, into the parsha of the Nazir. The question again is why? Why Shimshon? Right? Why wasn't David declared a Nazir? All right. I mean, Shmuel and Shimshon are two rare stories where we're told about them from before their birth. How many people are we told about before their birth? Moshe, Yitzchak, maybe you can count Yaakov if you're talking about them struggling inside his mother. I mean, we're not told about too many people like from their birth, right? So, all right, but Shimshon, here is what Chazal say. Any thoughts? Why does Shimshon have to grow up as a Nazir? Why is it so important? Jenny, you have to unmute yourself.
He has difficulty controlling himself.
Yes, Chazal say that Galui Haya L'Misha Misha Amar V'Haya HaOlam, the one who created this world, knew that Shimshon would be very, had a very great difficulty with controlling his passions. So his urges would be so further downgraded by a very weak inhibition if he would be given to strong drink, right? We all have urges, that's called the Yetzer Hara. We all have inhibitions, that's called the Yetzer Tov. What is the impetus to the inhibition? I might get caught, I might get punished, or just it's against the Torah, right? No one's going to know if I had chicken tonight, if I sneak a little bit of ice cream. I just don't want to do it because the urge for the ice cream is overcome by the inhibition to have it. And make no mistake, someone in whom a religious inhibition is strong, no matter how strong the urge is, that inhibition, if trained properly, will be very strong. In other words, Shimshon had a very strong religious inhibition, right, that was able to overcome the prohibition against wine. But it wasn't strong enough to overcome the
women.
Women. And he might have justified it, you know, whatever the thing is. Right? If a doctor tells me that your cholesterol is sky high and you really cannot have any more of that luscious vanilla Häagen-Dazs ice cream that you love so much, I'll steal away. Well, what's it doing in the house is a separate question. But I'm just making this up right now. But so I might, you know, steal away a little bit once in a while when I'm feeling the urge for it. But not if I'm fleishiks, right? When the religious inhibition can be trained to be profoundly strong. Right, you'll gamble. But it won't gamble if you make a neder not to. You make a neder that gambling is prohibited. People who are hopelessly addicted to cigarettes somehow manage not to smoke for 25 hours every Shabbos. Right. So be it as it may. So because the Kodesh Baruch Hu understood that Shimshon would have a weak inhibition when it came to his passions, right? So Ezo Gibor HaKovesh Es Yitzro, right? How do we know that from Pirkei Avos? Because it says that someone who's in charge of his passions is greater than the Loched Ir. Shimshon was a Loched Ir. He conquered cities, but he couldn't conquer his Yitzhara, right? So let it not be further weakened by substance. That's why, you know, when David wanted Uriah to go home, he gets him drunk. But Uriah was so in control, he didn't go home to his own wife. Right? Okay, even drunk, he didn't go home. Right? When you're drunk, your inhibition is very weak. You do things that if you're sober, you wouldn't do. Right? So this is in a nutshell why Shimshon has to be a nazir. But wait, Shimshon's CV is Philistine slayer, right? That's what he does for a living. He kills Philistines. Isn't killing one of the things a Nazir is not supposed to be doing? Not only is he not supposed to kill, he's not even supposed to be near death defilement. So what's with that? So the Gemara in Daf Dalet Maseches Nazir asks this question, and it says that Shimshon punched them hard and then retracted before they died. You get it? He was never near a dead body. Or he killed them with a jawbone. He killed them with an item. A jaw, only metal, a metal item, chalal cherev, transmits tumah. You get it? Metal transmits heat and electricity and tumah very well. But the jawbone of a donkey does not transmit tumah that well. So I'm just saying that the Gemara then after the Gemara thinks that those are forced answers, the Gemara says, no, Nazir Shimshon is allowed to metame, is allowed to be death defiled. How do you know? Why we say that? Just because he did kill Philistines? Why not just say he violated the Torah in doing so? No, that's why God hired him. That's why God, his whole point, the whole point of Shimshon's birth is to save the Jews from the Philistines. Well, he doesn't have to fight them himself. He could have raised armies. Shimshon never fights with a single army. He always fights himself. And every time he wreaks the Lord's havoc on the Philistines, it's in the context of some kind of relationship with a Philistine woman.
That's the story. I thought Goyim weren't Tomei Meis, only Jews were.
Yossi, that's the good answer, but the, halachically, your answer is that a Gentile is not Metame Tumas Ohel in Parshas Chukas. But the whole Parsha of Tumah Chalal Cherev in Parshas Matos was a war against Midian. Goyim are Metame Tumas Mega. Which the Gemara did answer, according to your Taina here, that he pulled away before, you know, he hit them, but then he pulled away before they died. But then the Gemara just concludes that Nazir Shimshon, and there's nafkamina. If I say I'm a Nazir, I can't go to a funeral. If I say I'm a Nazir like Shimshon, I can. Right? Why? And this is no Gaya to the Haftarah. We just read this past Shabbos. Because when the angel told Shimshon's mother, your son is going to save the Israelites from these fierce enemies. Right? So take a look, please, with me in Perek Yud Gimel. And he tells her the instructions for the child. Hinein at akara v'lo yaladet v'haris v'yaladet ben. Right? Like Chana, she was barren. And then the angel says, but you will bear a child. This child will be very special. Umora lo ya'aleh al rosho. Like the original, the first law of the Nazir is that his hair is long, right? That's a reminder he has with him all the time. Right? Ki nazir elokim yihyeh hanar min habeted. From birth, he'll be a Nazir. V'yochel hoshias Yisrael mi'yad plishtim. He's going to save the Jews from the Philistines. Right? Now, before that, the angel told her, va'atah, hi shamri no alti, va'alti shti yayin v'shechar, Va'al tochli kol tamei. Don't drink anything from wine or shechar. Shechar, by the way, halachically means
beer.
No. Beer and whiskey are both permitted to a nazir. Shechar, oh. Old wine. Shechar is like brandy or even anything from the grape that might be stronger than wine in alcoholic content. So halachically, maybe midrabanan, you can argue maybe a nazir should not drink shechar either, meaning what we call today beer or spirits or things like that. But be that as it may, the angel just told her not to drink anything from wine, strong wine. And then he says, "Va'al tochli kol tamei." What does that mean? Was she eating tamei before that? Don't eat anything tamei. What is that? Don't eat pork. Don't eat ritually impure items. The Gemara has a real problem with this, and the Gemara concludes that the word tamei here means don't eat anything that is tamei to a nazir, which would include raisins, grapes, grape seed, grape skin. Okay. Don't eat what a nazir can't eat, and don't drink wine. But notice that the angel did not tell her anything about the third part of the nazir's rule, which is death defilement. Okay? But what would you do with the fact that he also never says that the boy shouldn't drink wine? He says the mother shouldn't drink wine. Any thoughts about that? The Ralbag, right, Rav Levi Ben Gershom. Ralbag says, and as well as the Sforno in Parshas Noso in the Torah, they say a simple, it sounds like a chiddush for their time, and they say that we know that what a woman eats or drinks while she's pregnant goes into the baby. So the angel didn't have to say that the child shouldn't drink wine, like he shouldn't get a haircut. It's obvious. You can't even have wine when you're pregnant. You can have wine after you give birth to him. Right? You ever hear of the halacha about a woman shouldn't, that a woman shouldn't go to a cemetery when she's pregnant? Mm-hmm. Where did that come from? So let me tell you the source.
It's about a Kohen's wife.
It's about a Kohen's wife. A Kohen's wife shouldn't go to the cemetery when she's pregnant. Because if she gives birth to a boy in the cemetery, a one-day-old boy can't become death-defiled. A one-day-old Kohen. Everything else, you have to wait to your bar or bas mitzvah to follow the Torah, except Tumas Kohen. Right? Remember, Emor la Kohenim, Emor la Gdolim, Mahazir la Ketanim. Right? So Shimshon had even a bigger chiddush. Shimshon couldn't even have wine as a fetus. Okay? Kal v'chomer after he's born. Okay, got it? This is the Tanakh's way of telling us this fascinating scientific fact that couldn't be known back then. That a woman, when she's pregnant, better eat healthy because the baby needs healthy food. Okay? All right, so the three laws of the Nazir as they apply to Shimshon. Death defilement, not at all. No haircuts like any other Nazir. What about no wine or grapes or anything like that? That does apply to him, even though it never says so in the story, as a Kal v'chomer. He couldn't even have wine inside his mother. Kal v'chomer, not after he's born.
Rabbi, but there was something special, because now it is written many times that in certain periods of pregnancy, the woman can drink wine. You see, that's what I read several times.
Well, that if you're going to say now, I know I've seen on wine bottles, warning, don't drink if you're working on heavy machinery, don't drink before driving, and don't drink if you're pregnant.
Right. Yeah,
that's a separate rule about to children in general, but we're talking here. We're talking here. It may not be. I don't know. Maybe it's not true that wine in moderation is not. Maybe it's true. It's not harmful for a fetus. A little bit of wine. I don't know, but I know that even a drop of wine is harmful to a nazir. Right?
Okay.
Okay. So that's the difference.
Okay.
Okay. All right. So this explains her rule now. If you try to figure out who in Sefer Bereishis has this, let's say, this motif. This is a boy born to elderly parents who obviously waited a long time to have him, right? He's an only child. They didn't have any other, right? And the motif is that he's going to be spoiled, right? Doesn't have to share a room with anybody. I'm sure he had a very good allowance. He probably got to go to the best camps. I don't know. He probably got everything. Right? His parents went many years without children, so they probably accumulated some wealth. Right? I don't know. I'm making these things up. But who in Sefer Bereishis fits this motif?
Yitzchak
is the correct answer. And it's not me saying this, by the way. It's the Medrash HaGadol. This is a Maimer Chazal. Medrash HaGadol, and the Das HaKein Mibali HaTosfos cites this Medrash HaGadol that Yitzchak could be bought by Tzayid Befiv because he was used to eating dainty foods. I am sure, says the Das HaKein, that Sarah spoiled the living daylights out of Yitzchak. Right? So that's Yitzchak, okay? That he was used to being, spoiled. So if he liked his food, he's going to like Esau for serving it to him. And Shimshon, and the reason why I say this about Shimshon is because Shimshon falls in love with a Philistine woman. This is past our Haftorah, by the way. It's right after the Haftorah. Pasuk right after. It says he fell in love with a Philistine woman and he told his parents. Evidently at that time, when you got married, you didn't just go over, and start courting someone. You didn't say to someone, will you marry me? You went to your parents and you said, I'd like to take a bride. And they might say, most of the time that meant, find me one. Right? But it could also mean, well, which bride would you like to take? And he goes, oh, that one right there. We go, okay, we'll talk to her parents and we'll arrange it. All right, so that's how things were done back then. Only in this case, when Shimshon tells his parents who he wants, their reaction was, let's say in Yiddish, what, felt menishkein Yiddish meidlach in town? What do you have to go to a Philistine? So it says his parents didn't realize that this was a toaname Hashem. This was God's excuse for getting even with the Philistines. That Shimshon should have business with them every time because of his association with a Philistine woman. Or, you know, well, a woman, let's put it that way, whatever she was. All right? Now, if Shimshon was not a spoiled kid like he must have been, when he went to his parents to say, I have fallen in love with a Philistine woman, and they said to him, right, you should read the pasuk inside, it says, Ha'ein bivnos achecha v'chol ami isha ki ato olech lakachas isha mi plishtim ha'arelim. You don't have enough Jewish women in town. I'm sure they were lining up to marry him. Right? Right? So what was his response? O sokachli ki hi yoshua be'enai. That's the one I want. No, you don't understand. What do you mean? I know there are lots of Jewish women who are willing to marry me, and that would give you more nachas. But you don't understand. She's the one I want. So what would two Jewish parents, what should two responsible Jewish parents say to that? Yeah. You don't make the rules around here, Shimshon. Right? Let you say, you're the son, we're the parents, right? Parents make the rules in families. Right? But they don't say that. They just say, he says, no, but that's the one I want. And then they, you know, they say, oh, well, that's what Shimshon wants. It's like, you know, Dudley, what's his name?
Harry Potter.
In Harry Potter, the kid who gets the 37 gifts or something Dudley. Like that. Dudley? Okay, so they go and get him? They go and get someone for him? Okay. Now, there's a rule in Nazirus, because Nazirus and Chametz and the laws of Taras and Mishpacha share something in common. They're the three most machmir parts of Kol HaTorah Kula. Taras and Mishpacha, Hilchos Nida, and Nazir and Chametz. What do the three have in common? Why are we more machmir with chametz than all other foods? Why are we more machmir with nazir than with all other similar types of rituals and more machmir in taras mishpacha than anything like it?
Time bound.
They're time bound and they are most of the time permitted. Usually permitted. So when something that's usually permitted becomes forbidden, you can bet your Shulchan Aruch that the laws of Nazir are going to be much more stringent than the laws of pork or the laws of shrimp. Or the law, you know what I'm saying? Right? Prohibition that are placed, the fences that are placed around to make a safeguard so that we don't violate the laws of Nazirus are going to be more stringent than the safeguards we need to put around the laws of not eating lobster. Right? And the same is true for chametz. Because I had a pretzel 2 days ago, nothing wrong with that, right? So I'm used to eating, going for 11 o'clock at night when I feel a little hungry, I open up and look for a midnight snack and I see a Kit Kat bar and I'm, okay, I'll have some, right? Okay, so then I forget that it's Chol Moed. All right, so you get the picture. So when something is usually mutter, so there's a saying in the Talmud. If you hear the saying, right? It says, it's in Aramaic. Schor schor misaviv, karma karma. Because if a nazir sees a vineyard, he has to run away and go far away and circle the go and make a more circuitous route than to walk near a vineyard. Now, that's not only true about the Nozir of the vineyard. It's true about whatever it is that we have. Someone I knew an incessant gambler who was successfully stayed away from gambling for some time, but he was in someone's house on a Shabbos afternoon and they were playing Risk and they were throwing dice and they kept hearing the dice throwing. After Shabbos, he went back to the computer to gamble. Throwing the dice across the table. I know an alcoholic who says anytime he hears ice cubes being thrown into a cup, it makes it very hard for him to stay sober.
Wow.
Just hearing the ice cubes fall into the cup. We don't know what the nisyonos are for different people to stay with a measured program, right? So this is all about the personality of Shimshon. Now, what's fascinating is, you know, when he goes with his parents to find the wife, it says, "Vayered Shimshon v'aviv v'imo timnasa v'yavo ad karmei timnasa." And they came across the vineyards of Timnah. Now, the rest of the story is cryptic. It says they saw lions, and then Shimshon ripped open one of the lions. He killed the lion, but his parents didn't know that he killed the lion, and he took the honey, was in the carcass of this lion. Why didn't the parents know? They were with him. The parents should have seen the lions, right? So here's the beauty of that saying of Chazal, that say if a Nazir sees a vineyard, circle and circle, go around in a circuitous route. Don't walk near a vineyard if you're a Nazir. Of course, people aren't Nazirs anymore today. You can't have a Nazir outside of Israel, that's for sure. And if someone is a Nazir today, he's in big trouble. He has to be a Nazir for the rest of his life. Mm. Because we can't get out of Nazir because we can't bring the three korbanos that the Nazir would have to bring. You're stuck. You have to. You remain a Nazir until you bring those korbanos, and there's no Beis Hamikdash to bring those korbanos. You'd be stuck, right? So, but what this statement means in the Gemara that if a Nazir sees a vineyard, saviv, schor, schor, go around, move. It's because look, it says they came to Karmei Timnasa in pasuk Hey. When they came to the Karmei Timnasa, it doesn't have to say so in the Tanakh. What happened there? Shimshon's parents went straight into the city. Shimshon had to walk all the way around to avoid walking in front of the vineyards. That's where he came across the lions. That's why his parents didn't know about it. Okay, otherwise, it's a big kasha. He's walking with his parents. It says they came up to the Karmei Timnasa, the vineyards of Timnah, and his parents should have seen what he did to the lions. How could it say later that his parents didn't know about it? The answer is because he had to move, he had to walk away because he wouldn't stay near the vineyards. Okay? All right, so we've answered our questions about why Shimshon has to be a Nazir, right? I would just say that the two questions in Chazal over whether a Nazir is something positive or not, I would have to tell you that it's unequivocal. There's no room to say that a Nazir is a sinner in light of two biblical sources. One, a story. One, just a statement made by a prophet. The prophet is Amos. The message is in the beginning of his book in chapter 2, where Amos speaks about all the great things HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for Bnei Yisrael when he took us out of Egypt and gave us a land, and how we strayed from him over time. Even though God sent us prophets, Nevi'im, and Nazirim to set us straight. Even though he gave us prophets and Nazirim, right? A Nazir is definitely a good thing. If anyone in the Gemara says it's bad, it could be, why is he becoming a Nazir? We'll get to that shortly. But just an interesting point is that the Targum to the word Nazirim is Malfin, teachers. It seems the Targum is purposely avoiding the direct Aramaic rendition of the Nazir, and it prefers to translate it as a teacher. I've given you prophets and teachers, but the pshat is the pshat, right? The second story is chapter 35 of Sefer Yirmiyahu. Always remember this story when evaluating the Nazir. Yirmiyahu praises a certain family, the descendants of a man named Yonadav ben Rechav, a descendant of Yisro. Yonadav ben Rechav charged his family with a number of standards. The standards seem to be quite taken up by Islamic Bedouins. He tells them, don't ever touch anything from the grape or wine. Do not take up residence in any place for too long. Only live in tents. Do not plant vineyards. Only plant small crops where you could move on to another place after you finish living there. The man's name is Yonadav ben Rechav, and Yirmiyahu spends an entire chapter praising the descendants of this Yonadav ben Rechav for refraining from wine, essentially being like almost like a nazir, because that was the standard of their ancestor, Yonadav ben Rechav. In contrast to the Israelites, who have not kept the standards of their elders and their ancestors in any way, shape, or form. You have a lot to learn from this Yonadav ben Rechav. Go look at chapter 35 of Sefer Yirmiyahu and you'll see what this is about. So what is it? Why does someone in the Gemara say a Nazir is a bad thing? So because the Gemara was very much against the ascending Christian theology that the human being reaches the crescendo of our own personal potential only in seclusion. You have to live in a hermitage, in a cloistered environment to reach your full potential. This is very much not a Jewish theological position. Our position is that you do not reach your full potential unless you are part of a community. The Kohen Gadol cannot even serve on Yom Kippur unless he's married. Christian theology started to take root, which would ultimately produce the idea that their priests can't marry. It's not part of original Christianity, by the way, but that the Pope is just a bocher as far as we're concerned, right? You have to be married. Now, there is someone in Tanakh who seems to make that mistake of thinking that in order to reach the pinnacle of holiness, he declared that if given a certain circumstance, a certain particular person shall be holy unto God. And he made an awful mistake by sending away that person, his daughter, to live in seclusion, where it keeps saying she didn't get married, she lived alone, she didn't know a man. Of course, I'm referring to
Yiftach
and his daughter. Ramban is very much against this interpretation that Yiftach sent his daughter away. He thinks that Yiftach slaughtered her to fulfill Hayal Hashem v'hal Yisiyu Olah. Ibn Ezra says, no, that's a mistake. The Hayal Hashem is if it's a person, Fahatli Siwa Law, if it's an animal. Then the Gemara in the beginning of time, this might be correct. The worst possible scenario for that circumstance would be if a pig or a donkey or a camel or a dog would go out. Doesn't the Gemara know that worse than that did come out? Gemara gives the worst case scenario for three people who made bad deals. Eliezer, what if a chiyuger, a suma, a Canaanite comes out and gives you water? Shaul, what if a mamzer would kill Goliath? And for the same money, Kalev, what if a mamzer would conquer Kiryat Sefer? So doesn't the Gemara know that if those are the worst case scenarios, that worse than a pig did come out? Isn't it worse to slaughter a human being than a pig on God's altar? There's no death penalty for slaughtering a pig on God's altar, but there is a death penalty for committing murder by slaughtering a human on God's altar. Misa bidei shamayim, no doubt, for slaughtering a pig on God's altar, but not misa bidei adam, right? Yes, someone named Matisyahu might come in and kanoim pogimbo, but a beis din, a Sanhedrin, wouldn't kill him. Of course, slaughtering a pig. So why does the Gemara not give the worst case scenario? Because Yiftach never said, I'm going to slaughter a human being. Right? He said, if it's a human, then it'll be holy unto God. And so Yiftach, that meant sending his daughter away to live in seclusion. So when Ramban says, I don't like that interpretation, it smacks of heresy because it sounds Christian. And proof that it's wrong is from Shmuel, because Shmuel's mother also said, if you give me a son, I'll make him unto God. And Shmuel got married, right? Shmuel had a family. Shmuel had, was part of the community. In fairness to Ibn Ezra and in defense of Ibn Ezra, Ramban is correct about the theology, but I'm not sure he's correct about the Parshanut. Why is he okay with Yiftach making a mistake and slaughtering his daughter, and he's not okay with Yiftach making a mistake and thinking that the way to come to holiness is to live in seclusion? It's not the Tanakh saying that, it's Yiftach saying that. You know what I'm saying? Just because Yiftach thought that the way for my daughter to be unto holy unto God is to live in seclusion, never knowing a man, does not make that a Jewish theology, no more than the fact that he slaughtered her on the altar makes that a Jewish theology. Right? It's a mistake. He made a mistake, whether it's one mistake or the other. You get it? Okay. So enough on the Nazir. Just one, just the bottom line, I think it's fascinating to connect it this way. It may be a machlokes in how to understand the etymology of the word. Would anyone like to venture here? What is the shoresh of the word nazir? Give me another Hebrew word that
nazir.
Nazir.
So Michael says nazir for Ibn Ezra. So or zar lahazir, right? So if you are if you're from the school of Rashi, so the nun falls out in the word lahazir nazir, so the nun can't be part of the shoresh then. So Rashi says that the shoresh is lahazir, means to become estranged from. You make yourself estranged not only from wine. You make yourself estranged from your friends by not being able to go to their funerals. You can't go to your friend's funeral, your friend's father's funeral. You can't go. You can't be around other people lest one of them die suddenly. Right? I just saw this interesting perush in Eicha. I'm going through the Yalkut Me'am Lo'ez, and so in Eicha it says Darchei Tzion Avelus. He says, how are the streets to leading up to Jerusalem in mourning? So he says, well, because people aren't making Aliyah L'Regel, so the streets are empty, it looks like they're mournful. So he says another parish. He says that when the streets of Jerusalem are tended, so it means there's a municipality that is paying for people to go on the roads and on the side streets and the strips and to make sure there's no kilayim, like, right, no Rosh Chodesh Ador, right? Remember that? First Mishnah, Meshech HaShkalim. Yeah, everybody? But when there's no responsible municipality, or, you know, if you walk in some places of Central Park now, you see the brush is taking over. It looks like no one trimmed this lawn in 2 months, 2-3 months, like in the middle of COVID. Remember, you walk around the reservoir and you'll see no one's trimming the brush. So that's Darchei Tzion Avelos. When a person is Avelos, the hair, the gets wild, and the hair grows. So Darchei Tzion Avelos means that the brush is getting, it looks like no there's no one there to tend to it. Huh. Right? So that's how he said that. So he says here that a nazir is become estranged from everybody. His hair makes him look estranged. He's not metalaman, you get it? He's not with people. He can't be near other people because, right? Remember the Gemara says if you go to someone else's funeral, they'll go to your funeral. You know, no, the nazir, no one's gonna, you know. So I'm saying is that they can't go to your funeral because they're dead. But what I'm just saying is that the nazir really estranges himself in many ways. Everything he does, he takes upon himself. He can't. Did you see in the Wall Street Journal had a book review this past weekend about, it's called Drunk, about the value of wine over the millennia and how wine helped to shape the peace pacts and the like. And no, you haven't seen it? Look, if you have a chance, the book is called Drunk. It's a fascinating it was a fascinating review. I put it in my Nozir file. So the Nozir really estranges himself from a lot of people, and that's the word Zohar. However, as Michael just said, Ibn Ezra says, and this fits Ibn Ezra's philosophy on this. Ibn Ezra was a full Aristotelian, as the Rambam was, that we should prefer to be alone and like, like the song, I am a rock, right? I have my poetry, my books and my poetry protect me, right? Hiding in my room, safe within my womb, I touch no one and no one touches me, right? Right. So that's the famous Rambam talks about this a few times in the Maor Nevuchim. Ramban was so incensed by the position that he wrote a book called Igeres HaKodesh about the need for human touch and the human association, right? So but Ibn Ezra and the Rambam were of that opinion that the Nazir is a Nazir. His long hair doesn't show that he's estranged. His long hair is a crown. He's as holy as the Kohen Gadol, says the Ibn Ezra. And Ramban, coming off a little bit from that position, says that the Nazir's sin is by going back to life afterwards. You had such holiness, and now you're going back to life. So yes, 100 times yes, that's what the Torah wants from this person. The Nazir, you see, there's a type of Nazir that says, Haroes Sota Bekil Kula Yazir Etatzmo Min Hayayin Daf Bezim Et Aleph Nesecha Sota, right? That if you see the harm that wine does to someone else, so refrain. Does that mean refrain forever? Really, the Torah wants us not to have any benefit at all? Even the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch codifies a law in when we go to the next world, one of the first questions they're going to ask us, why didn't you enjoy that pleasure that was permitted to you? To Yerushalmi in the end of Maseches Kedushin. What about the Yerushalmi in Yevamos Kadeshes Atzmacha B'Mutalacha? Make yourself holy with what's permitted. I think if you look at the first Ramban in Parshas Kedoshim, that Yerushalmi is talking about following mitzvos d'Rabbanan. Right? Don't just live by the Torah. If you live by the Torah, you could be a novel Birshus HaTorah. You can be a rogue following every single mitzvah of the Torah. You have to follow the Drabbanans. You have to learn Pirkei Avos. You have to learn Mishle. You have to learn the things beyond the Torah in order to fully perfect our images and our personalities and our characteristics and our traits. But otherwise, we're going to have an answer a cheshbon for why we didn't enjoy this thing. Okay, it might depend on why this person became a Nazir. If he's worried about staying an alcoholic, then he should remain that way. You can't have an alcoholic can't who really ruined his life and he's been sober for some years. You can't say let me start helping him drink in moderation. No, that person should stay away from alcohol for the rest of his life. That's because he already destroyed his life with alcohol, and he's very close to destroying it again. I've worked with alcoholics on this. Cough medicine can get them started again. Right? And make no mistake, you could be sober for 20 years. I don't know this from personal experience. I'm so famous in the shul for never drinking anything. I know it's terrible. I don't even drink a l'chaim. But I'm just saying, I know this firsthand from other people I've worked with, that they could be sober for 20 years. And every day is as hard as the first day of those 20 years.
Right.
Right? In certain other things, every day you stay away from the thing, it becomes easier. You know, you do things 2-3 times, then you become into a habit, right? But every day could be a struggle for really hardcore alcoholics. However, the Nazir of the Torah is not that individual, because the Torah says after he finishes cutting his hair and he brings his korbanos, what does the Torah say? Ve'achar yishte hanazir yayin. Not then he may drink. You wouldn't call him a nazir then. He's finished being a nazir. Why does the Torah say achar yishte ha'ish yayin? Achar yishte yayin. Maze achar yishte hanazir yayin. Because we want this person to go back to moderation. Torah is not really talking about an alcoholic who feels the only way for me to stay away from wine is to add the ritualistic barrier called a neder. You get it? I once did this for someone. He was a hopeless gambler. And I made him take a neder. I didn't want to make him a bigger sinner. I tricked him. I told him, make a neder not to gamble for 1 year. And he kept it because he was so religiously inclined. He's like the guy who's never going to take a spoon of Haagen-Dazs if he's fleishig, but he will take a spoon even though it's going to skyrocket his cholesterol. Okay, so he was such a religious sensitivity that he went the whole year without gambling. Right? But here's what I did. I took a Tanakh cover and put it on another book. So he thought he was making a neder on a Tanakh. He put his hand on it and he said, I make a neder, I'm not going to gamble for 1 year. Now, if those of you who know Maseches Nedarim know that that is an absolutely worthless statement. You make a shvua not to gamble. There's no such thing as making a neder not to gamble. You can't make a neder not to sleep. There's no such thing. A shvua is on verbs, on behavior. A neder is on nouns, on items, on things. There is something called making a neder. I make a neder that dice are forbidden to me. You can say that. Making a neder, cards are, playing cards are forbidden to me. Horse racing pages are forbidden to me. I make a neder that casinos are forbidden. A casino is a thing. I make a slot machine is forbidden to me. I make a neder not, right? You can't make a neder, I'm making a neder not to play a slot machine. Because playing a slot machine is a verb. You make a shvua not to play a slot machine. You have to learn those two mesechtas. This also explains why Shavuos is in Seder Nezikin and Nedarim is in Seder Nashim. It's an important difference. So he thought he was making a neder, and just the thought that he made a neder kept him from gambling the whole year. Right? That's the importance of this sensitivity of how strong the crown can be on the head of a nazir. Right? Ostensibly, Shimshon had only two laws of the nazir. I'm not sure. Does it ever say in the story that he drank wine? I don't know. In the movie Samson and Delilah, Victor Mature drank wine before he got his hair cut, right? I don't know, it seems to me that his avera was that his hair wasn't the source of his strength, even though it says that his hair grew back, right? Hashem was the source of his strength. It's just that by leaving Hashem, Hashem didn't, you know, departed from him. Of course, the irony of the story is that he saw most clearly after his eyes were removed. He was blinded by what his eyes saw, and was never a clearer visionary than when his eyes were taken from him. Right. Okay, I'm sorry I took so much a percentage of this presentation to the Haftorah of Naso when this week is Haftorah of Baloscha. But can someone give me a good reason why I don't really need to explain too much about Baloscha?
Because
I did already. I did already back in December.
Right.
Okay. But what I'd like to do just in the few moments that remain is to show that Bahaloscha is the Haftorah for Chanukah is really better for Chanukah than it is for Bahaloscha. Because Chanukah has three elements. There's a menorah, there's a war where the few defeated the many, and there was rampant assimilation that had to be corrected. This Haftorah has all three of those aspects. It really connects fully to Chanukah. Of course, the main theme is the menorah with a never-ending source of light, many, many dozens and dozens, or even possibly hundreds of tubes leading into the different sides of the menorah, with two olive trees leading into these tubes. The two olive trees, according to Yerushalmi and Sukkah, are Mashiach ben David, Mashiach ben Yosef, and the Shnei Bnei HaYitzhar. And there is a pasuk, Lo b'chayav lo b'kolach kim bruchinu Hashem. That's the few beating the many. And you have a whole section of the Haftorah about assimilation, as is manifest in the putrid clothes worn by the Kohen Gadol, because his own sons were intermarried. Right? Hashem says you cannot serve as your Kohen Gadol, as Kohen Gadol, until you remove those putrid clothes, meaning tell your sons to get rid of those Babylonian wives, or have them convert or something. Right? Just a sign of the intense assimilation is that even the Kohen Gadol's own sons, the functioning Kohen Gadol's own sons, were intermarried. So how does it fit into our parsha? Okay, parsha Spaloscha has a lot of material in it. It has a menorah, it has the Levium, right? It has the Chatzotros, it has the way they blew the trumpets and they blew the horns in order for the camps to move, right? It has Moshe asking Yisro to stay with them. It has one of the most beautiful modes of communication, which is the Shaila. The people really wanted to do the Pesach, but they couldn't because they were Tamei, right? It's the most beautiful of all human communications is the Shaila. I want to know, what does the Torah expect of me? What am I allowed to do? And you have one of the most disgusting types of communication is the misonanim, the kvetching. People kvetching in the desert. Oh, we remember this and we remember that in Egypt. Yeah. And we have perhaps the most disgusting type of communication, which is Lashon Hara at the end of the parsha with Miriam and Aaron against Moshe. So, and then we have the communication with God through the trumpets again. And Rabbi Socher Yaakovson in his book, Bina B'Mikra, which is translated into English in a sefer called Meditations to the Torah, very popular in Israel in the 50s and 60s. He wrote a more famous book called Chazon HaMikra and HaFtoras, and perhaps his magnum opus is called Nesiv Bina, a four-volume work on the Siddur. Right? And it just is the intense popularity of this author is manifest in the fact that his book on the Siddur is also translated into English, called Meditations on the Siddur. Maybe you've seen it. Okay, so Yaakovson says that Parshas Baloscha is the Parsha of communication. All different ways that we communicate with God, with each other, with in good ways, in negative ways, in positive ways. You have the Nevuah of Eldad and Medad. You have, silence them. So how does the menorah fit in? So this, I saw it from Rav Nachman Breslover. I don't quote Rav Nachman so often, but I think this comes from him. The menorah is a human face, right? You have three receptacles on one side, a nostril, an eye, and an ear. Three receptacles on the other side, nostril, an eye, and an ear, to take in the senses. And then we have the mouth, that's the shamus, right? You have seven receptacles on the face, right? You see them? See how the human face is a menorah? But it's the mouth that determines whether the menorah is going to be, the right, which is dexterous, or the left, which is sinister, right? The Chacham thinks from the right side. The Ksil thinks from the left side, says Koheles, right? So that's why, of all the things of Parshas Baloscha, the Haftorah connects to the menorah. But on Chanukah, the connection is more profound, because it doesn't just fit with the menorah part, it fits with the whole spiel. Okay? L'b'chayav l'b'kolach, and the assimilation as well as the menorah part. Okay? Any questions?
Was the Nazir of Yerushalayim a Nazir?
I you know, today you have, there's something called a Nazir Shimshon, there's a Nazir Olam. There's no, you can't be a Nazir, you say, I'm going to be a Nazir for 30 days. The problem with that is, how can you un-Nazir yourself? You have to make some kind of a tnai. You say, I'm a Nazir, meaning I'm refraining from certain things. And then the question is, can you do that and say, even though I can't bring the karbanos, and you know, the person would have to say, he was in, that, I mean, the word out there was that that's Rav Kook's brother, that he was Nazir for the rest of his life. He held his Naziris for his whole life.
The same with Shir Yashuv Cohen.
Cohen, yeah, right. Yashuv Cohen's brother, right? That's who. Oh, that I think that's who read Dr. Goldberg.
Shir Yashuv himself was a Nazir all his life.
That was his father, no? The Nazir was his father's.
The person known as a Nazir was his father, but I know that Shir Yashuv also refrained from wine and so on.
Mm-hmm. Interesting.
It was Rav David Cohen.
Yeah.
Yeah, he was married to, I think...
coming from the West Side.
Naomi
Rachel's sister.
Right? Naomi Goldstein.
Yeah.
Naomi Goldstein's daughter.
Right. Okay, Chevra, that hour always goes very fast. The Wednesday night, we have the Minchas Chinuch. Okay, everybody, we're all good?
We're all good.
Thank you very much, Rabbi.
Have a great week.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful week.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful week. Aaron, Sue, Chava,
good night.
Hello, Camille.
Hi.
Hi.
Thank you.
Charlie, Paul, Michael.
Rabbi,
thank you, Rabbi.
Good night.
Rabbi, can you hear me?
I do, yes, Michael. Yeah.
I just, you mentioned in the Haftorah for Nusso that the mother couldn't eat anything tummy.
Right.
So I read the Tzeno Arena. And they quoted the Balaturim and what they teach it as she shouldn't eat. In those days, women who were not fertile ate a rabbit's stomach.
Wow.
And that was what was meant by that pasuk.
Hmm. Amazing. Wow.
It's in the Balaturim.
Don't you eat a rabbit's stomach.
Because those multiply like rabbits. I think it
right.
was
in order to have fertility, because you will conceive even without that treatment.
Yeah.
Wow. I saw that too. I saw that also.
You saw that?
Yeah.
Wow. Balaturim. I went through the Balaturim last week on Nusso.
I saw it as secondary source.
Yeah.
But it was in it's the Tzeno Arena that they quote the Balaturim.
Oh, I have to look in last week's.
I have the English Tzeno Arena.
Uh-huh. Wow. Okay. I have the original. Okay, everybody, have a good night.
Okay. Good night.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone. Kol tov.
Bye-bye.
Shayach.